CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The Coin World Podcast.
Welcome to the Coin World Podcast. I'm not even sure if we've actually done one of these in 2024 because it's been absolutely busy in a very, very good possible way. I know I'm unpacked from my trip. Jeff, are you unpacked from your trip? Oh, yeah. I'm Larry Jewett.
And I'm Jeff Stark, and I have my roller bag full of auction catalogs and books still to open. Well, I've opened them and I pulled stuff out, but I haven't sorted things yet. So I'm just getting back into the swing of things after the New York International. And of course, you got to go to the Florida United Numismatist Show. It was a lot warmer where you were, and the bourse was much bigger, but lots of everybody had great things to say about both shows, I think.
I think so, too. I mean, everything that I've been seeing so far, of course, I can only speak for the Orlando show. And, you know, when you were talking about unpacking books and unpacking catalogs, for me, that's the show where I pick up as much as I can because I don't have to worry about an airplane and weight limits and that type of thing. So I can appreciate the fact that you had to unpack. It took me quite a while to get all the things that I was able to pick up from the show. But basically, that's what we're going to be talking about here today. For many of you who had the opportunity that you were able to get out, get to a congratulations, that's getting your year off to a good start. As you know, it can be a very positive trendsetter if you have a very good show. And certainly a lot of people from the early returns, and I can again only speak for the Orlando show, a lot of folks had a very positive show. I will say this, that you know, you never know what you're going to get. And this year, it seemed like everything was working in the right direction. They had a couple of seminars. PNG put on a seminar. The NCBA put on a seminar. All of this activity happening before the public could get into the show. And all of the returns on that was it were very informative, which that, you know, is a big part of Orlando. And part of the fun shows is the information that you can get there, not just the great array of coins and currency that you can take a look at. But once the public was able to get on the floor, wow, I mean to tell you now, this Thursday, they opened it up at 10 o'clock and it was steady throughout the entire day. And no matter where you went in the show, you had to pretty much fight a crowd. And that was a real positive thing. And it leaned up a little bit on Friday. And on Saturday, it seemed like it got a little lighter, but then that depended upon where you were in the show, because there were certain parts of the show where it looked like Thursday. And a lot of the folks that went there for their dealer-to-dealer type transactions were positive about that. A lot of the ones who were doing retail, they seemed to be pretty upbeat as well. So it was, you know, a few downsides, totally out of the control of the organizers. It had rained. You talked about the weather earlier. It had rained quite a bit, and it seems like the Orange County Convention Center found a few weak spots, as there was some wet spots happening, unfortunately, by some of the dealers. And it was, fortunately for us, the drip that we had was just in the aisle way, not in the booth area. So it was very positive. You know, there's so much to say about it now, 2 weeks in arrears from when it actually happened. And hopefully the trends do continue. But if you had the chance to come by and see us at the Coin World booth, we appreciate you being there for that one. Certainly, we left there with a little bit of enthusiasm, a little bit of excitement, a little bit more than we had about what the year ahead lines up for us. But then again, you know, a lot of folks were going from Orlando and they were going to New York, and that's where you were. What did you see up at the NYINC?
So it's, you know, there's no other show like the New York International, and I've been privileged now to attend all of the shows held from 2009 to now, except for last year when I got sick. And of course there wasn't any during the pandemic, but it's a more tight-knit community, I think, is the best way to describe it. There's certainly lots of dealer-to-dealer and dealer-to-collector business going on, but with a smaller footprint and with the limit to no U.S. coins unless they're, you know, before the 1800s, I think, is the rule. You know, it necessarily limits the scope of the show, but there's enough activity. I mean, we talk to folks from a dozen different countries, if not more. I mean, you know, there's folks coming from all over the world for the kickoff to the numismatic year. And so that parallels the fun show, but it's just a different dynamic because of the friendliness, the, you know, everybody there in many respects, you know, they know all the dealers, you know, certainly if you've done business with them before, you get to know the folks. It's just a different atmosphere. I don't know how to describe it other than that. You know, there's, and it's uncommon, I won't say weird, but uncommon to have the bourse fragmented as it is in the New York International, in a couple different rooms and if in the lobby areas and the hallways type setup. So it makes, you know, they make the most of the space they have, and get a ton of folks in there. It's not like a big A&A or fun where there's wide aisles and long, and it's, you can cover the bourse floor in a short amount of time, except for the fact that, you know, their tight spaces make it hard to get through. And, you know, it's sort of a little bit of a maze, but it's a different animal. I don't know what else to say.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. They all have to have their own characteristics. And, you know, we talked primarily about the expansive bourse floor and about the dealer-to-dealer and dealer-to-retail trends. But, you know, the fun show for me, I spent as much time, I think, off the bourse floor going to the, like, the Society of Paper Money Collectors Breakfast or attending the seminars that we had there. Colonel Howard's is a must-see. Dave Harper's is a must-see. You know, John Roberts is a must see. So, I mean, I had plenty of opportunities to get up and get educated a little bit and see what others are thinking and talk to people that are there listening that share the same interests in what you have there and get some understanding. But sometimes you can't have conversations down on the bourse floor because you're standing in the aisle way or standing in front of a table or anything along that line. And those places happen to be the places where you can learn a little bit and listen a little bit to what the collectors have to say. And of course, now, you know, with the transition and some of the responsibilities changing, I'm interested in what people are having to say, you know, about the content that we cover in the magazine, about the trends that are going on out in the hobby itself, what they're finding is interest. Of course, it was well publicized on social media that the security forces did their job and they nabbed an individual who was doing, shall we say, things that they shouldn't have been doing at a particular venue like that. And they, you know, got a lot of praise for that, as well they should, because security was, is, and will be for some time a big issue of concern, no matter whether you're sitting up at a table, whether you have your personal collection along with you, whatever the case may be. You want to make sure that it, you know, it is protected, and the security forces that did their job on that particular afternoon, I happened to miss it because I was up at a seminar, but just to see the pictures on Facebook and to read about it. And, you know, in the interim, there have been some circumstances reported on social media where individuals suffered losses because of some laxes or because of something that could have been done better, so to speak. But, you know, that's going to be the case. There's always going to be a situation where somebody out there thinks more highly of something that you have and will do things to get to it. So it's good that we have people like the NCIC and the security forces, but we, you know, we have to do our part too to maintain a sense of diligence over what's going on. You know, if you see something, say something type thing. So hopefully, you know, it becomes more the exception than the rule as we go along. I know you're looking forward to going back to another show. I don't get to go to another show for a little while yet, but I know that you're already making your plans to go back. And this animal is going to be a little bit different than both the Orlando show and the New York show.
You're not talking about the early February show in St. Louis either.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, but that's a good show.
Which I hope to pop in on at least the Friday of the show. But no, I'm gearing up for the World Money Fair in Berlin. That is going to be just an enormous event if last year and previous years are any indication. This brings folks from around the globe together, world mints, auction houses, coin designers, the manufacturers of the companies, the companies that manufacturing the presses and the machinery used to strike coins, add color to coins, the companies that create the blanks. I mean, it's every link in the chain, every step in the life cycle of a coin is there. It really is a unique animal in that sense, and it's enormous. The floor is enormous. We're cautiously optimistic that some changes that are being implemented from new management will make the show look a little different and hopefully even be even more successful for folks. But I'm kind of a proponent of or believer in, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But I know, it's very different from American shows. One thing that stands out right away, and I know you mentioned security, in the Berlin show, the World Money Fair, there are proper booths with backing and signage and all that stuff. And it's a proper trade show in that sense. And that's something that has been resisted in the U.S. because of security concerns. And security is, of course, an utmost concern. But I think the Berlin show manages to walk that line of presenting a show differently and ensuring proper security and safety. So we'll see how this episode goes, if you will, this iteration of the show. The Monnaie de Paris, the French Mint, is the guest of honor. They are all excited because of this being the year for the Olympics. So we're looking forward to seeing what they have to announce and other mints will share at the show. I'm in the middle of setting up meetings with a bunch of folks so we can continue to sort of monitor that and keep our fingers on the pulse of the hobby internationally. So it's going to be a long, busy, rewarding week.
Well, do you think, I have to ask you this though, do you think your visit to Ottawa to the Men Directors Conference is going to be an advantage for you when you get to the Berlin show?
Certainly being remembered and, reminding folks that I'm out there and just the relationship building aspects, the market monitoring, the connections side of things, sure. But I've been doing this so long, people, it's a rewarding thing that people recognize me and know what I represent, where I work. And I don't have to work in the same way that I did 15 years ago when it was hustle to every single booth and talk to folks, you know, implore, hey, we'd love to get information about your coins. We want to see what you're doing. We want to share that with our audience. Now I get to maintain those connections after having built them. And yes, people come and go. It's not a you know, static thing. It's you're always monitoring the situation. In fact, somebody from the Royal Australian Mint just left at the end of the year. So now I'm reaching out to find out who I need to work with going forward. It's that kind of thing. But somebody else at the Mint that I've worked with as well, they know me. And so I don't have to build that from the ground up. You know, you're not you're putting the roof on. You're not putting the foundation if you're looking at a house situation. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be good, but it is work.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, we're fortunate enough that, you know, they say if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life. And certainly you love what you do. So that's great. Now, and, you know, we've looked ahead at the future a little bit. We've gone started with the past and we went to the future. Now we got to go back to the past once again. We have a brand new year ahead of us here. And so that means we get a chance to look at events that occurred in January when we take a look back at this week in numismatic history.
Sure. So I'm going to go to January 17th, 1917. What was happening that day? Well, that was when the first 1916 and 1917 standing Liberty quarter dollars were released to the public. The standing Liberty quarter is famous. Certainly the 1916 is it 1916 D is the a key date, I believe. And no, I'm thinking of the Mercury dime. Anyway,
I'm definitely a key date for sure.
I'm a world coin guy. Forgive me. I should have pulled out my red book and double checked before. But, you know, the design change, if you will, with the bare breast and all that makes this type pretty famous and popular. And so I thought that was fun to highlight. I also, the world coin guy in me looks at January 18th, 1950 as a fun aside. That was when Canada announced a design change for the 1951 5-cent coin, which commemorated the 200th anniversary of the isolation of nickel. Canada has had a large role in mining and producing and the scientific science behind nickel, as referenced in that mention there. And this one-year type actually shows like a factory on it with a smokestack and all that. And it's a fun little different design that's out there in the Canadian nickel series, and it was only used for 1 year, 1951, and they had a design contest to pick the design. So that happened. Both of these things happened this week in numismatic history.
And here I'm the kind of guy that would have thought, well, the beaver's been on the nickel for forever, or the 5-cent coin for forever, and I would be wrong because you just cited an example when it wasn't there. So,
well, and also during World War II, there was the, you know, people talk about a wartime nickel in an American context, but during World War II, Canada came out with the Tombeck nickel, which has the V for victory, and it was struck in a copperish, bronzish looking alloy metal, METAL metal. And then they employed that V for victory design subsequent years, the Tombeck nickel, I believe, was 43. Then they used the same design, but on a nickel, or a steel coinage, I think, in 44 and 45. So that's another instance when the beaver did not appear on the 5-cent coin. And it makes for a fun little subset to go with the American wartime nickels. You got to have your Canadian set too.
Well, and you see, the idea too is that some people, and I've seen this happen before, is that some people confuse the Canadian Victory nickel with the V nickels that were seen in America. And they say, well, this is a V nickel. No, it's a Victory nickel. It's a different deal. No, no, it's the same thing. It's like, okay, well, you know, then we move on and you go on to something different there. But it's good insight to find out a little bit of the difference here, because we're actually that V nickel. I bring that up because I'm going to be talking about that a little bit later on when we get around to our letters to the editor from the January 15th, 2007, which is just a random pick that we've had here. This is going back 17 years ago into Coin World history to come away with what was going on just that period of time. So I think that's going to strike the lifetime of a lot of our listeners, and hopefully there's something that resonates with that.
Yeah, I got to say, there's a great story on the cover of that issue that talks about a different nickel, a famous nickel or 5-cent coin. And this story is headlined, Walton 5-Cent Coin Returns to North Carolina, 1913 Liberty Head Coin Exhibit Set at Charlotte A&A Show. So the famous George O. Walton example of the 1913 Liberty Head 5-Cent Coin, this was a dealer who was in a crash in 1962. The dealer died in the crash, and the coin was lost, although it turns out that what was in the time called or deemed a replica or fake in 2003 would be authenticated as the real deal. Walton famously took the coin around to coin shows all across the South and coin club meetings and things, and showed it to wide-eyed collectors. Well, this story is that in the 2007 issue, I should say, says that the coin was going to be exhibited during the ANA's National Money Show held in Charlotte that year, March 16 to 18. So a coin comes home, a rarity returns. I'm fortunate enough to have seen all five of the Liberty Nickels, when 1913 Nickels, when they were on display at the ANA's World's Fair of Money. But this was a chance for folks in the spring show, if you will, to view the rarity, and it had hometown ties. So how about that? That's what I wanted to zero in on.
Well, let's just keep it on Liberty Head 5-cent coins, because there was a letter in that particular issue back on page 15 that said scam possibility ? But it refers to a Liberty Head 5-cent coin that was made 30 years before that. The U.S. Mint produces coins, but apparently no one on staff studies the history of our coinage, is how the letter starts out. Back in 1883, our first Liberty Head 5-cent coins were issued with a V on the reverse, and the word cents did not appear anywhere on the coin. Later in the year, they corrected this oversight. The scam artists of the time realized that by gold plating this coin, it could be passed off as a gold $5 piece, as the designs of the two coins were quite similar. It was popularly referred to as the racketeer nickel. Now, I pause there to point out that about 2 weeks ago, I bought one of the racketeer nickels. I have since gifted it to my father-in-law, who collects the Liberty Head 5-cent coins. The letter continues, in 2007, the Mint is issuing half-ounce gold coins with our first ladies on them. In order to give all collectors the opportunity to collect the designs, they're being struck in bronze without the denomination or fineness designation. It does not take too much of a stretch of imagination to understand that these bronze pieces will also get a gold plating treatment. Instead of safeguarding the integrity of our coins, the Mint is once again creating a loophole for a scam to be repeated. The people who make these decisions should do a little more research, and perhaps a serious numismatist should be added to their group. That's a letter from Ruth Bauer of Holland, Pennsylvania. Interesting letter. There was one other letter, but it is probably about 900 words, and I don't feel like talking that much.
Well, I do thank you for sharing that letter. I do find it interesting, since those first spouse medals are a particular area of interest. In fact, I went to a little one-day show here in St. Louis where I sit at the first Sunday of the year, I guess it was, and I picked up six more of them out of dollar bins. I have seen some partially plated examples of these medals on eBay. I have not yet seen gold plated examples, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. So anyway, very cool. You said you didn't want to talk that much, but I do need to hold your feet to the fire and have you talk a little bit about the trivia question from last time. I wanted to know, what is the lowest denomination of U.S. paper money ever printed? And this is from Coin World Trivia, the last question of 2023. So what is the first answer of 2024?
Are we talking fractional currency here? Are we talking paper money? Had to be done by it? It is paper money, and it was done in the United States. Certainly it was. So, I mean, you know, what, you know, and there were very small denominations of that, certainly. You know, just the idea, I think they went down as low as like 3 cents to go up against, I mean, because that was the cost of postage or what. I think 3 cents is the answer.
Are correct, sir. So you got it right.
I quit now. I am the champion. I quit. That's it. I go out on a high note. So,
well, start the year on a high note. How about that?
Yeah. See, using the word note where I could. So, yeah.
Yes. Pun definitely intended, I guess. So, I looked at the next card in the trivia game, and there's a question here that makes total sense, because we are now in 2024, and 2024 is an election year. So,
it is. Yep.
You may have noticed there's been lots of chatter online and on TV and all that stuff. Fast forward about a year from now, and we'll have an inauguration. So the question is, who issues official presidential inaugural medals? Inaugural medals. Who issues them? And think about that between now and the next time we convene. And we'll put your knowledge to the test, your skills. I want to see if you can keep your streak going. You're one for one in 2024. Hopefully you can take that momentum and charge forth and get it right next time.
Yeah, I was listening to see if you gave me any clues in that description, and there were none. So a little programming note that we originally did have a guest lined up, but unfortunately things get in the way here. But right now, we're starting to stack them up here. We expect to start getting our guests back into the program here. So you're going to have to keep listening to see who's going to be coming on in 2024 as part of the Coin World podcast. And we also have some sponsors who are very interested in getting involved here, too, that have some great products and some great services that can help you get a little better and get a little more out of your numismatic journey here. So, keep listening, as we've got some great things happening here. I want to give a shout out to you for a fine story about the upcoming Lunar New Year, which is coming up here. It's going to be on the pages of the monthly issue of Coin World. So thank you for that great story there helping us out. You've got to be subscribing to Coin World, pick up on it, and see some of the stories that we have here. Paul Jokes doing a great job. Steve Roach doing a fantastic job. And Bill Gibbs is contributing, continuing to contribute here. So we've got the team coming together here for the print issues of Coin World. So thanks once again for being a part of the Coin World podcast here in 2024. I hope your New Year's resolutions are going well. I hope you're getting out to seeing the shows and having the fun that we know that you can have when you are involved in the hobby or the business of numismatics. But until next time,
happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Coin World Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about Coin World Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.